early this morning. We're just trying to get the people's business done, even if it is early. The first thing I want to do on the agenda is Senate Bill 82, Chair moves that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 82. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair moves that we pass Senate Bill 82 as amended and refer it to the Ways and Means Committee for further business. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And then let's go to the archaeological bill. Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 64. I think we've got some amendments here. Mr. Hammack. Good morning.
Good morning. It is morning, isn't it? Mr. Chairman, James Hammack, Assistant Director at Parks and Rec. I've seen the amendments. Senator Beyer was kind enough to discuss this with me, and we agreed to do another definition of archaeological investigation, and I reviewed the amendment, and the department's fine with it.
Okay, and Senator Beyer, do you have comments about these amendments?
Mr. Chair, we had them drafted after our discussions and the last time we heard the bill, and I think with these amendments the bill would be fine to move forward, and hopefully we'll give some clarification to what in the statutes. And
could you just recap for us what your concern was that these amendments address?
Well, yes, Mr. Chair, just the amendments address, I'm looking for the original bill as I'm speaking, here we go. The amendments address what is an archaeological investigation. If you look on the original bill on page 1, line 6, where they use the term archaeological investigation, and we couldn't find where that was defined anywhere in statute. So to give a level of comfort to me and to some of the other land use groups, or not land, natural resource groups, on what exactly an archaeological investigation was, we thought we should define it. So with that, and with the statutory scheme that we discovered as we were going over the bill last time in committee, when I'm again looking for all the different papers I have on this bill, so I got a bunch of them. But I just want to point out for the record that you've got lots of prohibited conducts in 358.920, but in 358.915 you've got exceptions to those, and this statute 358.945 is one of the exceptions, so for you've got some private landowners protection there.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Chair moves the adoption of the
public hearing.
Yes, you're right. We're in a public hearing. So let's close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 64. Senator Beyer, you want to make a motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments in Senate Bill 64.
Okay. Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 64. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 64 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 64 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I'm just thinking if it's too early to say something to the effect that...
The answer is yes, Senator.
With these amendments, you could say that Senator Beyer really digs the bill now.
He digs the bill. Yes, he does.
I'm sorry. I had to add something this morning.
That's fine. Is there any further discussion? Any objection?
Nobody has a sense of humor this hour. I don't understand it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hammerick. Let's go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 177. Charlie Stone and Ian Whitlock, please.
Good
morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thanks for being here early.
Thank you. I'm with the department, Charlie Stone with the Department of Forestry. With me is Ian Whitlock, General Counsel for the Department of Forestry with the Department of Justice. And thank you to, for this opportunity to support Senate Bill 177. Senate Bill 177 addresses a policy that's already in place in the law. But last session, when it went through as House Bill 2200, while it had ample support in both chambers, when it got to the governor's office, he allowed it to become law without his signature because he felt that there were some constitutional issues with the bill. He supported the policy element but was concerned as to whether or not the mechanics were quite right in the bill. And so he allowed it to become law, and we promised that we'd come back this session and see if we could get it to where it does exactly what we want it to and without any problems. ORS 477-125, which is the subject of the bill, deals with two elements. The first is that it provides generally for wildland firefighters to not have liability for damages if there's no willful misconduct or gross negligence. And the second part is the part that's a little bit problematic. It deals with Forest Protective Association employees when they're working under the direction and control of the state forester off their district. In our firefighting system, we operate interchangeably with the Forest Protective Associations. It's almost as if they were state employees. They're on our fire teams. We exchange resources and that type of thing. So what we're trying to do here is to apply the limits of the Tort Claims Liability Act to these people when they're operating as interchangeably with the Department of Forestry. We've constructed this bill. We reviewed it with the AG's office and with the governor's legal counsel. We think we've corrected the problem by changing the language where instead of assigning the liability to those employees directly, we define them as agents of a public body, which is how the Tort Claim Liability Act, when they're working in these circumstances. So one other point, I guess, there's a minor amendment needed to the bill. There's dash ones prepared, and it's almost a silly little thing, but in Chapter 477, the state forester and the forester are defined differently, and the forester is the broader term that implies any employees or agents of the state forester, and so we have to delete the word state from the way that it's constructed. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Request that you support this bill.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? The tort claim limits are 100,000 economic, 100,000 non-economic. Is that being?
I believe you're correct, Charlie. I believe it's 300,000. I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, I think it's 100 for economic, 100 for non-economic, but. The bottom line is we're limiting their liability.
The liability itself, the notion of liability limits was what was achieved in the first go-around on the legislation, and this deals with
okay. This goes against the very principle of the trial lawyers, but we'll pass it anyway. Is there a motion? Well, let's close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 177.
Mr. Chair, move dash one.
Senator Atkinson has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 177. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move the bill as amended before the due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 177 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Thank you very much.
You want me to carry that?
Sure. If Senator Beyer would carry that, that'd be great.
Oh, I should. I may have to put a conflict on the record now that I've already voted on. But for the record, I'd like to state a potential conflict of interest. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Fire Patrol Association.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, we didn't get a carrier on 64.
Oh, yes. We didn't get a carrier on Senate Bill 64 either. Senator Beyer, would you do the honors on Senate Bill 64? Okay. Thank you. Let's go to Senate Bill 184, please. Lisa Hansen and Kenneth Foles.
184.
Gosh, we would have put more bills on the agenda.
No, we wouldn't have. We're fine.
So we wouldn't have to come in Thursday.
Well, the
record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 184 is simply a housekeeping bill for our state fertilizer program, and I brought with me Janet Fultz, and she'll go through the things that have been changed in this legislation.
For the record, I'm Janet Fultz. I'm the Fertilizer Program Manager for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. The specific changes recommended by the department in SB 184, there's seven of them. And the first one is the term available nitrogen has been changed to total nitrogen. It's used in the definition of agricultural mineral products, fertilizer products, and primary nutrient. This change will make our laws consistent with other state laws in regards to product labeling. The definition of distribute was added per the recommendation of our Assistant Attorney General. This one term consolidates and standardizes statute language in several sections. The language clarifying exceptions to the definition of the fertilizer product was standardized to be consistent with definitions of agricultural mineral and agricultural amendment.
And which section are you referring to now?
I'd have to go back and check.
I think Janet has simply consolidated the seven changes.
There's seven points that are changed. Do you want me to separate them out by section?
Well, the last part that you just said, I'm just trying to follow your testimony through the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are also some changes in this bill that were recommendations in form and style by legislative council that are mixed in. So the real substantive changes are ours.
I understand. Seven.
The more subtle ones are legislative council's.
Right.
The fourth change that we recommended was the definition.
I'm sorry, I just didn't follow you on the third change.
Okay, we'll go back to the third. It's in the definition of fertilizer, which would be in section one. It's on page three. Large H.
Okay.
Where it says biosolids, derived products, compost,
okay,
and animal and vegetable manures. We added that are not packaged and do not contain a grade statement.
Thank
that
you.
Makes it consistent with the other definitions.
All right.
Okay. And the definition of soluble potash was added to provide clarity and consistency to product labeling as well. That'll also make label requirements consistent with other states. The reports that are required to declare the amounts of product distributed into or within Oregon for specific six-month reporting periods were referred to as statement or semi-annual statement. They were referred to differently in different places. These various terms were replaced with semi-annual tonnage report for consistency in terminology and clarity as to what the meaning was.
And what page are you referring to now?
Okay. I should have done this by page. I think the first change is on page 10. Section 8 refers to semi-annual tonnage report. Mentions it again on page 11.
Okay.
And there's other changes as well.
Okay.
Okay. In regards to paying inspection fees associated with the filing of the semi-annual tonnage report, the department recommends that if the fees due are $5 or less, that the reporting party is not required to pay. Submission of the report, the actual tonnage report, is still a requirement, but the payment of less than $5 would not be required. Do you want me to find that portion?
Yes, please. Bottom page 13.
Okay. Thank you.
That would be on page 13.
Okay.
In the assessment of the maximum civil penalty of $10,000 as allowed in statute, the conditions that would determine this penalty were inadvertently linked together with an and instead of an or. Although seemingly incidental, this had a significant impact on the department's utility of this enforcement tool. This has been corrected to independently address each condition. And that... last page.
Could you show me exactly where you're taking that and to an or?
Yep. Section 17 on page 15, but I don't see that either.
Page
line 39.
Page 15.
Right.
Line 38 and 39 is where the...
Oh, okay.
The and is struck and the or is put in. It changes it from gross, a violation that arises from gross negligence or willful misconduct and that results in a substantial harm to health or the environment to or.
Okay.
Okay. Those are the changes. Thank you very much.
Anything else to know about this bill? Senator
Schultz. This is a silly question, but what does agricultural amendment mean?
There's different different grades of fertilizer product out there, and if the grade statement, which is the nitrogen, phosphorus, and soluble potash, totals less than 5% of the product, it becomes an agricultural amendment and makes a change to the soil for nutrient value for the plant.
But for a while, maybe it meant manure or something. I didn't know what it meant.
Thank you for telling me what it means. Thank you very much. Anything else from the committee? Okay. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 184. Open a work session on Senate Bill 184.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 184 before the due pass recommendation.
And Senator Byers moves Senate Bill 184 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I'm sorry, I had Terry Witt signed up here. Sorry about that, Terry. Why don't you come up and give us your wisdom?
Oh, real quick.
You're not going to make us change our mind on this, are you?
Chair Ringo, members of the committee, no, I'm not. My name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I'll make it very brief. Submitted testimony from myself and also from Scott McKinney, who is Director of the Far West Agribusiness Association. Both of us were involved in the writing of the bill that was adopted in the 2001 legislative session, broadly amending the fertilizer statutes. We agree with the department's what we call housekeeping amendments in this particular bill, and would urge your due pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. Senator Shields, do you want to carry that bill?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Shields?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair. Yeah. Could we haul Mr. Greg Addington up here between bills?
You want to haul Greg Addington up here for what purpose?
Just to have him inform us of a change in his career path.
Tell you what, we'll do that. You want to do that right now?
Yeah, I think it's fitting before he leaves.
All right. Mr. Addington, you need to come out and testify before the committee on some issue.
May I proceed with my line of questioning?
Sure.
Would you please state your name for the record?
Greg Addington, and currently with the Oregon Farm Bureau.
You have a cold, Mr. Addington?
I do.
Are you in no way complaining about the early hour, are you, Mr. Addington?
Not at all.
Did he ghost write the story in the Statesman Journal complaining about the hour of the hearing this morning? No?
Mr. Addington, it's come to my attention that today will be your last day of employment with the Oregon Federation Farm Bureau. Is that true?
That's a little incorrect. Friday will be my last day.
Mr. Addington, will this be the last time that I have the ability to grill you as a representative of the Oregon Federation Farm Bureau.
That is correct.
Mr. Addington, why are you leaving Farm Bureau?
I mean, besides this, I've taken a job as the executive director for the Klamath Water Users Association.
And before we question their judgment in hiring you, could you tell us what kind of work you'll be doing for the Klamath Water Users? I think it would be of interest to this committee. On a serious note.
Well, as of right now, I think I'll be doing a rain dance and trying to work with federal agencies, the states of Oregon and California, and trying to come to some solutions to some of the water problems in that basin.
Thank you. Is there any questions for Mr. Addington? This early hour?
I don't think so, Senator Atkins.
Thank you very much, and thanks for everything over the years, and best of luck in Klamath Falls.
Thank you all. Thanks.
Thanks for your patience, Greg, on this. let's do some House bills. House Bill 2196. Jim Rue and Bernie Faber.
For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture, and here today we have three of our State Board of Agricultural members to testify on House Bill 2196. They have done extensive work over the last year to look at the different options to the board in terms of taking on more responsibility and more policymaking, a larger policymaking role for the Department of Agriculture. So I'd like to introduce Jim Rue, and Bernie Faber, who's chair of our board, and Mr. Ken Bailey, who is the vice chair of our board, and they will do the testimony for this bill.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you, Lisa. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to thank Senator Shields for allowing us to entrance to the building this morning at 4:07.
Kind of standing in the cold out of the end of the building. Nobody had a key.
We're grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Jim Rowe. I reside at 8195 Southwest Ernst ERNST Road in Portland, 97225. Mr. Chair, as Lisa has suggested, this House Bill 2196 represents the culmination of about a year and a half's worth of work on the part of a subcommittee of the Board of Agriculture. In response to comments from throughout the community, including the governor's office, we undertook a conversation with our constituents about how the Board of Agriculture might become more visible and more influential as a voice for agriculture in the state of Oregon. And we heard a lot of things from a lot of people, but among those things was that there was a very clear recommendation that we not become a rulemaking board, but that we focus on policy, that we entertain three or four or five discrete topics during the course of a given year and focus our energies on examining those topics, perhaps producing white papers, certainly coming up with board positions which we would then communicate to our constituency, the legislature, and certainly the governor's office. We also heard that particularly our agricultural constituency, the industry itself, was very clear that we maintain the board composition as a producer-dominated board. Currently, we have seven members who are producer members. Two are represent consumer interests. I happen to be one of those, although I also have a small working farm in Silverton. But Rick Gustafson from Portland and I from Portland are the two consumer representatives on the board currently. We'd like to maintain that composition. We also were very clear that the board should then, as a producer-dominated board, continue its work to advocate, whether it's for export purposes, whether it's for marketing purposes, whether it is purposes of potentially contentious issues, to be the center of the conversation in the state about those issues, and hence this piece of legislation. With that, I'm actually going to stop and allow my two colleagues to make a couple of comments, and then we would very much like to take your questions if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ken Bailey. I'm a cherry grower from the Dalles, Oregon, and vice chairman of the Board of Agriculture. I don't have much more to add to what Jim has stated. I just wanted to point out that what we are doing in this bill is nothing that we haven't been doing for the last year and couldn't do without this bill, but I think it formalizes the process and puts more responsibility that this being more active and being a point of policy making for agriculture puts it in a formal manner where the board would be responsible to continue those activities. We have been doing most of what we're asking for in the last year, and I think people have been pleased with the direction we are going, and this puts it in a formal manner to where I think it'll be more valuable to the industry and to the state for the policies in agriculture. Thank you.
Chair Engel and committee, I'm Bernie Faber, chair of the Ag Board. Reside in West Salem, a dairy farmer. As stated earlier, we have discussed this proposal with a lot of different groups and feel that, and we listened to them. We made some minor changes in what we had proposed, but listened to the industry. We've sat down with groups like Oregon Environmental Council, and they didn't see a problem with this. You know, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, the Farm Bureau, and so forth. So we feel very comfortable. I think one of the things that always alarmed me when I talked to people out there from the farm industry was who is the board and what do they do? And I think this will put the profile up there a little bit higher and give us more responsibility at least where the rest of the industry feels that we are representing them. We have seven members with about 220 different commodities, so we got a big responsibility. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. You know, as I look at your Mr. Roo's testimony, this bill would restructure the Board of Agriculture and increase its responsibility. Can you tell me exactly how that happens in the bill? I'm trying to understand how it is that these changes will give you more authority or more responsibility to do what you need to do.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'll take a stab at that, and then Ken or Bernie can add to it. I think in two ways. The bill very clearly and very explicitly says that we should advise the director of the Department of Agriculture on policy.
And you think right now that's not clear, that you don't have that mandate or the authority to advise the director on policy?
I think that we probably, as Ken has suggested, we have gone through a transformation in the last year where we have stepped up to that role, but this makes it very clear and explicit.
Okay.
And the second one is then that the bill also directs us to submit a biennial report on the state of agriculture to the governor and to the legislature, something that we have not done in the past.
Okay. Anything else from the committee? Okay. So, yeah, Senator Fields.
I know it's not exactly the same, but I'm on the board of Community College. And I looked at this one line in your testimony about the bill removing restriction for reappointment to the board. We work in a consensus model a lot on our board at Mount Hood Community College, there are times when members of the board almost were hoping that there was some kind of restriction on the tenure of a member, you know. Is there any circumstance in which you might regret getting what you're asking for here? I know the board's great right now, and everything's perfect right now, but looking into the future, could there be a circumstance where this could work against you, considering that you might be a consensus body and nobody want to be impolite and say to somebody, it's time to retire or something?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, just to be clear, the specific language is that any given person could be appointed to two consecutive terms and then would have to leave for at least 1 year before they could be reappointed by the governor. I also serve on other boards. One of them, Oregon Episcopal School, is an institution where you can serve almost for as long as you want or as long as the school wants you. There certainly is a value to that because of institutional memory. On the other hand, we have, as Bernie suggested, some 200 commodities out there that are all seeking to have some representation on the board, and we think this kind of strikes the balance from institutional memory to hearing from different voices throughout the state.
Thank you. Okay. Well, Senator Shields, I guess you raised for me whether that's a valid concern or not. But any other thoughts from the committee? Okay. Good. Well, thank you for coming up here. I don't think there's any more witnesses, so let's go ahead. I can close the public hearing on House Bill 2196. Let's open a work session on House Bill 2196.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2196 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved House Bill 2196 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And let's open a public hearing on House Bill. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2198. And Lisa Hansen, Dan Hilburn. Senator Atkinson, you want to carry that last bill?
Sure.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture. This will be our last bill for you this morning. I have with me Dan Hilburn from our Plant Division. And ultimately, House Bill 2198 simply makes the civil penalty authority in our plant division for our plant health program, nursery program, Christmas tree programs permanent in statute. And Mr. Hilburn will talk to you just briefly about what has happened over the years while we have had the civil penalty authority with the sunset provision.
Okay, thank you. My name is Dan Hilburn. I'm the administrator of the plant division for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. This bill would remove a sunset, and prior to 2000, if a nursery owner or a Christmas tree owner or a person dealing in plants broke a law, broke one of the quarantines, there really was no teeth in our enforcement capabilities. We didn't have the ability to find them or to really bring them into enforcement except with letters and phone calls. The original bill was passed in the 1999 session, and it gave us the ability to assess fines for these types of violations. We've used it sparingly over the years, 10 times, and in all cases except one, we have had satisfactory resolution of the violation without actually receiving a dollar in fines. We still have one case pending, and we've now sent three fines to this particular person, and it's still in process. So we haven't given up on that, but we're batting 900, and I think that's pretty good. That's a whole lot better than we were before we had civil penalty authority. In our testimony there, you can see at the bottom the kinds of fines and how it's set up in a matrix. And the last paragraph gives some examples of minor violations, moderate violations, and major violations. Basically, minor violations are paperwork sorts of things, failure to have the right certificates, and major violations are knowingly violating quarantines, importing diseased plant material, that sort of thing. So we feel it's a very valuable tool for us. It gives us some enforcement capability that we didn't have before we had this civil penalty authority. I urge you to repeal the sunset.
Questions? Senator Byron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan, the one violation you have outstanding, and you know that I know quite a bit about that one, have you, what's the latest of what you guys have done on that issue? Last time we talked, you were looking at changing your rule and your matrix to make it a more serious fine. We discussed the possibility of maybe you don't have to do that, maybe your rule is fine, and just it can, because if it's a willful violation, that can automatically makes it a major offense. Can you update us on that?
Yes, the Christmas Tree Advisory Committee went ahead and recommended that we change the rule, and we did. And we're now up to a moderate violation, third offense for this person, so that the latest fine that we've assessed against him was $1,800. He quit receiving certified mail with the department logo in the corner after the first violation. So we've had the last two letters, the last two fines delivered by the sheriff, and in both cases he has continued to ignore us. So we're now at the end of the process, and that account will be turned over to collections.
Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up, I guess. How long has this been going on with this one individual?
This is the third season that he is not licensed.
And Mr. Chair, I'm trying to figure out, when does it go from a minor to a major, and when are we going to actually get something going? Because I know who the person is, and I know the operation. And, you know, the license fee alone should be probably $400 or $500 a year. So after three seasons, the fine is now $1,800, so the person is still probably money ahead by not paying the fine or not buying the license and just having a fine out there. So when are we going to get some real enforcement, and what are the next steps can we take to bring it into compliance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byers, he's not off the hook for the past license fees that he owes. So it is still accumulating. He owes for 2 years ago, 2 years ago, last year, and the fees that have been tacked onto it. So his account is getting to be something that is a lot more than he would have owed if he had paid his license fee right along. It'll be turned over either to the Department of Revenue or to a collection agency. I don't our business office has told me those are both options, and I'm not sure which one will be chosen, but after that it's sort of out of the department's hands, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to bring him back into compliance. That's what we'd like.
Mr. Chair, a couple more. On the timing of your notifications and inspections of who hasn't been licensed, when are you going to do that? And I'm going to speak for Christmas trees, but the same goes for nurseries and anything else. You know, it doesn't do much good to go through the file and look to see who wasn't licensed in December with Christmas trees when the shipping season is over and you need the permits to ship in November. So have you changed your practices and going to start looking at that in a timely manner?
Yes, and we've made a lot of headway on that. We actually have a very small number now of delinquent licenses. The notices go out in June. Licenses are due in July. After about a month, I think, there's a reminder notice that goes out, and then we turn it over to our horticulturists to begin making those contacts so that it all happens before the shipping season that you're referring to. And we've had outstanding success in getting those delinquent licenses renewed, or we find out that the people have gone out of business and no longer need a license. But we have cleaned up those accounts considerably since this process was started.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to have the department figure out a way to, and I don't, did you talk to your legal counsel about whether or not a willful violation of the law is a major offense without going through the matrix? Because we talked about that last time we discussed this issue, because clearly it's a willful violation of the law, and your rules do say that a willful violation is a major offense.
Senator Barr, the rule also has...
be careful about how you wrote it.
It also speaks directly to failure to license. So the intent of the rule was for somebody who didn't license to fall under the violation category related to failure to license rather than a willful violation of a quarantine. So the Christmas Tree Advisory Committee felt that the violation was a failure to license, and they voted to change that from a minor to a moderate offense, and that's what happened.
Okay, so what happens this year if that same person fails to license?
If we've had no, between now and Christmas tree season, if the person still hasn't paid their account through revenue or through a collection agency, I think we're to the point of taking them to court.
Thank you for your question, Senator Beyer. It seems to me that if this were funds owed to a private entity, the private entity would not wait 2 or 3 years to get their money. They would go after it much faster, and I don't know why the state should be any different, but thanks very much. Anything else from the committee? Okay, thanks very much. Sean Miller? Thanks for coming in this morning, Sean.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I represent the Pacific Northwest Christmas Tree Association in support of House Bill 2198. When the legislature gave the authority in 1999, legislature, to give the department the civil penalty authority, we supported the bill. However, we wanted to extend it and sunset it every 2 years to work with the department of how they were going to use the civil penalty authority. I think generally we've been pleased with the work that they've done with the Christmas Tree Advisory Committee. We extended it in 2001 for 2 years, and then in 2003 with the two co-chairs of last session, we extended it another 2 years. I know Senator Shields had asked the chair of last session asked that we come back and consider repealing it permanently. I think in that time, a lot of work has been done with the department, and therefore we feel comfortable in repealing it. However, I know Senator Beyer expresses one issue that we have been concerned with and still are concerned with. I know we've mentioned it at our last meeting with this one individual and this willful violation, and we would hope, even though we support the bill, that the department acts a little more swiftly in those actions. And I, again, we would support the bill, and with that caveat that we'd hope the department would act a little faster on going after that person. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Committee? Okay, thank you. Well, I don't think we're going to move that bill today, so let's go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2198. And is there any other business before the committee? Okay, then the committee is adjourned.